live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I'd like to welcome you. This is going to be a day devoted on this program to 9/11, to the survivors, to those that they lost, and to trying to understand the truth. I'll be leading off with a commentary. Then we're going to have Richard Gage. Richard Gage is a scholar. He lives in San Francisco. He's an architect of 28 years, a member of the American Institute of Architects, and the founder and CEO of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. He will be joined by David Weiswinkle. And David is a president and founder of the New Jersey 9/11 Aware. He's a retired New Brunswick police officer and a United States Army veteran and presently a criminal defense attorney. I'm going to begin with a quote from Henry David Thoreau, a person I have a great deal of respect for. He said, in essence, that before love and before riches and or wealth, give me truth. And what I believe, and I'm sure many of you believe, is we have not been given truth as it should be. Can I tell you who was behind 9/11? Whether it's the official story that they were just hijackers who wanted to hurt America in some way? Was it anything more nefarious? I cannot tell you that. And I do not believe in conspiracy theories because I spent my entire life as a professional journalist and investigator and scholar in the areas that I work in of looking for the truth. And when I have the truth, I'll share it with you. I've watched dozens of films on 9/11, just one earlier this morning. It gave pieces of the truth, but nothing that could be taken into a court and proven that something happened. So therefore, what I can tell you with absolute certainty, as can thousands of other engineers and scholars and historians, is that the official version of 9/11 is filled with half-truths, complete omissions. Many people were not, and especially Dick Cheney and the President of the United States, George Bush, were not testifying under oath. And we know for certainty that there were people who were first responders, including police officers and firefighters, who said that before the planes hit, there were explosions. They heard multiple explosions. And this isn't a few people, it's over 200 people. Not one of those people was invited to testify, including a person who was in the basement and had a door blown into him and before there was a plane. And he then got one of the people out of harm's way and saved his life and the other person's life. So how do you dismiss all the people who have evidence that would in any way contradict the official version? Why is it that we were not told that the FBI was holding a series of documents that showed complete complicity by members of the Saudi government, including Bandar, who was a friend of the Bushes and the most powerful Saudi in the United States, funding several of those terrorists? Why is it the FBI stopped the investigation of Saudi complicity 3 weeks after 9/11. Who was head of the FBI at the time who would engage in a cover-up and who would be instrumental in having only one truth, the official version of it, but no, not allowing anything to contradict that? Robert Mueller. Yes, the one that the same Mueller that the left bent over backwards, praising as if he was a person of high-level integrity. We're going to begin by taking a look briefly at a woman of unique courage. In 2003, she was one of approximately 67 people working in one center with British intelligence, and she was a person listening, as all of them were, on headsets to conversations on intercepted phone calls in different countries of the world. And then if she saw anything that represented a threat, then she would pass it on to authorities who would act on it. One day, all 67 of these people working in British intelligence received an email. The email was from an employee of the National Security Agency, a high-ranking person, and he was inquiring about any dirt that they could get on 7 or 8 countries, heads, rulers, so they could use that to blackmail those countries into agreeing that on their position of the UN National Security Board, that they would vote yes for America to go in to Iraq. In other words, without the UN's official, acceptance, it was an illegal war. So they were looking for dirt to blackmail the leaders of these members of the Security Council who had voted no. She was rather politically astute, and she started to do her homework. And because of her unique position, she could get information the average person could not retrieve. And she was aware that there had been no weapons of mass destruction found. To the contrary, there were hundreds of inspectors looking everywhere and couldn't find any. And she also knew at that time, Tony Blair was the prime minister, that they were pushing for a stand to be with the United States, Great Britain, the United States, invading Iraq. She felt this was unjust. She felt, how can we turn our eyes away from the truth that there is no legitimate and legal or moral reason to back Tony Blair and George Bush in going to war in Iraq? Think of the people who will be destroyed. She was no fan of Saddam Hussein. She knew how deranged that lunatic was. So what she did is she printed off that memo, and she smuggled it out of the building, and she took to a friend of hers, a woman who was well known within the anti-war movement, who was living on a farm. And when she approached the woman checked to see if her batteries and her phone. The woman was very aware of how easy it is to spy on people, locate them, and arrest them, as was not an unusual circumstance for anyone who had challenged British hegemony or power or the royal family, etc. The woman said, you're going to get in a lot of trouble because this is in direct violation of the Official Secrets Act, and you could spend the rest of your life, as could I, in prison. But this other woman, Catherine Gunn, said, look at the larger good. And she was willing to take that risk. So the woman took that to a newspaper editor, a person of high integrity that was known to go after crime or corruption anywhere. They studied it. They needed independent verification. All doors were blocked to them. But one reporter for their newspaper found an access into the National Security Agency's system to see that this person was real, because everyone was denying he existed, he'd never worked there. This man actually got him on the phone. And when confronted, the man hung up on him. So that confirmed he was real. He worked for the National Security Agency. And then the reporter had friends in Parliament, had friends who were high up in the, what their equivalent, M15 and M16, their equivalency of the FBI and CIA. And they said, you know, this is important. So the newspaper ran with it. And all the major media wanted to cover it. And then they all backed off. Every single media, NBC, CNN, all said no. They didn't do their homework. They just assumed that because official sources said it's not true, it's a hoax, that nobody wanted to touch it. That woman was arrested. That woman was waiting a year before she was going to go to trial. She had a lawyer, pro bono, but he hadn't been one of the smartest lawyers in the United Kingdom. And he was able to get an interview with the assistant, or let's say the deputy attorney general. And it was only the attorney general who could determine who was going to be brought to trial. And she said that prior to this woman's releasing that document, the Attorney General stated that that based upon what was existing at the time, entering into the conflict with America would be illegal. And he wrote that to her. She had it. Knowing that there was a letter that the current attorney general, who had had Ms. Gunn arrested, could prove that she was correct and that she had not violated any standards. So at trial, the lawyer for the British government, the barrister who was representing them in the attorney general's office, says we're withdrawing all charges. And the judge was flabbergasted. And she walked out innocent and free. Why? Because had they turned over the document, that single letter from the assistant, the woman who was the assistant attorney general of Great Britain, then it would have proved that the attorney general, who was now backing the crown and the intelligence agencies, would have been shown to have been against the war, and there was no justification to go in there. I give you that as background. Why? Because here's the reality. The reality is that the United States, France, Great Britain, Italy, and other countries, Australia, have had a long and sordid history of lying to the people, their own people and citizens of the world, of engaging in obfuscation, cover-up. They have not turned over all documents that by law they're supposed to whoever they're challenging and trying to put in prison. Here's the problem. The larger issue is not just 9/11. The larger issue is that the government has yet to do anything representing even a legitimate or even semi-legitimate effort to find the truth. We need an independent jury, grand jury, of scholars and people who know the truth and bring forward all those voices who have compelling exculpatory evidence that could show the story was a lie and then get to the truth of it. But the media is not covering that. The media prides itself in calling anyone who questions any aspect of 9/11 some form of conspiracy theorist, no matter what their background, no matter what their evidence. They even attack the families of the victims of 9/11 who wanted that information and had to sue Obama's government in order to get it. They finally got it, not because Obama said it's a good thing that you should have all the evidence, we have nothing to hide, but they did have a lot to hide. They had the fact that Saudi Arabia, who we were doing business with, was an active participant in that. There are lawsuits going on now. But wouldn't the media suddenly say in headlines and editorials, why are we doing any business with a country whose rulers and those in power supported at different levels the attack against the World Trade Center and Building 7. Why? Why would we even do any business with them? Right now, if you're caught doing anything wrong, you're persona non grata. Nobody will deal with you the rest of your life. And yet, without even any irony, the media did not back the families. The media backed the government. So the media is complicit in denying an open and honest form to explore the truth. Remember, even signers of the official 9/11 files said that there were gross mistakes in it. But just to give you an idea that the United States has used its intelligence agency, its State Department, its White House, and U.S. Defense Agency to cover up crimes against humanity and lie about it, and the media did not expose it. Individuals exposed it. Investigative journalists exposed it. The government didn't. Specifics. These are not conspiracy theories. These are historical facts. February 1998, the detonation of USS Maine, killing 266 men. Why? To launch a war against Spain. 1914, the bombing of the ocean liner Lusitania was supposed a German U-boat. Later investigations revealed that the explosions happened inside the ship, which was transporting 6 million pounds of artillery shells on behalf of the Morgan Bank, but it was blamed on Germany. 2005, undercover Israeli soldiers admit stone-throwing at IDF troops done by Jews in order to blame on the Palestinians to give reason to crack down on the peaceful protest. 1950, Operation Ajax. CIA hired Iranians to pose as communists and stage bombings to create a coup against Mossadegh. 1957, British Prime Minister admitted the United Kingdom's intelligence worked with President Eisenhower to approve a plant to carry out attacks in Syria and blamed Syrian government to effect a regime change. The 1950s, Operation Gladio. Italian Prime Minister and Italian judge admit the CIA, the Pentagon, and NATO carried out terror bombings in Italy and blamed it on the communists. Civilians and women and children were also attacked. The BBC did a special on that. 1960s, COINTELPRO, illegal FBI project to infiltrate domestic political organizations to discredit and smear them, including anti-war groups, civil rights leaders, including Martin Luther King, and journalists. The methods including psychological warfare, slander using forged fake documents, false reports to the media, harassment, wrongful imprisonment, and assassination. Congress later identified the false flag components in the operation. 1960, Senator George Smathers suggests a false flag attack on Guantanamo to give excuse to overthrow Castro, knowing there'd be a lot of casualties. 1962, Operation Northwood. The U.S. government admits to the Pentagon signing off, the top brass, the Joint Chief of Staff, on a plan to blow up American Airlines by switching airplanes and commit terrorist acts in Miami and then blame it on Cuba. 1963, the Department of Defense writes a paper to promote attacks in Trinidad and Jamaica and falsely blame it on Cuba. 1964, the National Security Agency admits it lied about the Gulf on Tonkin to make it look like North Korean or North Vietnamese boats fired on the U.S. ship. Everyone at the top level knew it was a lie. Lyndon Johnson and McNamara. McNamara later acknowledged this in Errol Morris's Academy Award-winning film, The Fog of War. Did anything happen to their reputations because it was acknowledged that they started the Vietnam War under false pretenses for political and economic and regime change? No. 1973, CIA documents revealed the program to train foreign police and troops on how to conduct terrorist attacks, while Congress believed the funding was to train them about how to investigate terrorist attacks. 1994, the U.S. Army documents Special Forces Foreign Internal Defense Tactics and Procedures, later updated in 2002, details how to employ terrorists. Yes, that's correct. Using false flag operations to destabilize leftist regimes and movements in Latin America. By the way, look at Syria as one good example of how well that works, where we, the United States, paid for the terrorists. And look at the truth behind why the Ambassador Stevens and the four people who were guarding him at the time were killed, and why there was a stand-down order by Barack Obama where it could have easily been prevented and they could have been rescued. Has he been held accountable? Has Secretary of State Hillary Clinton at the time been held accountable? No. 1984, they released the CIA manual for contra-rebels on how to assassinate an ally in order to create a martyr for the cause. The manual was authenticated by the U.S. government and covered up by the media. The 2000s, U.S. falsely blamed Iraq for its role in the 9/11 attacks. Iraq had nothing to do with the 9/11 attacks, yet Cheney and others were saying Iraq was involved. 2001, U.S. anthrax attacks carried out by more than one U.S. government scientist. The FBI senior officer was ordered to blame the attacks on Al-Qaeda. Who was head of the FBI at the time? Same person. 2005, the Bush Department of Justice Attorney General John Hu suggests the U.S. use its CIA to create a false terrorist organization with its own websites and recruitment and training camps to claim credit for real terrorist strikes to confuse Al-Qaeda's ranks. 2005, Seymour Hersh reveals Professor John Arquilla of the Naval Postgraduate School designed a plan to create a, quote, pseudo-gang of terrorist groups to carry out terrorist attacks to undermine real terror networks. from 1946 to 1948, the Great Britain bombed five ships carrying Jews fleeing the Holocaust to Palestine while setting up a fake group called Defenders of Arab Palestine to claim responsibility. Have you ever heard that? Did you know that that was real? Did you know that Jews were killed because Great Britain wanted to blame that on the Palestinians? Also, in 1954, Israeli terrorist cell in Egypt planted bombs in buildings, including the U.S. diplomatic facility, and left behind evidence to implicate Arabs. The bombs detonated prematurely, allowing Egyptians to identify the bombers. A few Israelis later confessed. 1984, Mossad planted radio transmitter in Gaddafi's compound to broadcast fake terrorist transmissions to frame Gaddafi as a terrorist supporter. Upon the news, Reagan immediately bombed Libya. Yep. Under Bill Clinton, false flag bombing against U.S. embassies in Nairobi and Tanzania by Mohammed the American, a U.S. citizen with a long U.S. military record and former instructor of explosives to Green Berets at JFK Special Warfare School. Bill Clinton immediately launches the, quote, war on terrorism after it. 1998, the bombing of the pharmaceutical plant in Sudan, which was claimed to be the creating biochemical weapons. It wasn't. It produced baby's milk. Hillary Clinton, a master of this, in 1996, landing in Bosnia under sniper fire. Never happened. Said a recruiter prevented her from joining the Marines because she was a woman. Never happened. Claimed that the attack on Benghazi consulate was an act of terrorism, used as a way station for weapons and missiles from Gaddafi that were shipped to the Syrian rebels. That means the United States, under Hillary Clinton, was funding ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda in Syria to topple a regime that they had on their map to topple. Now, if she had to say that under oath in the committee hearings where she said, what difference does it make? Well, it makes a big difference if now we go from having a war on terror to being one of the primary supporters of terror. Perhaps the downing of the Malaysian airline over Donbass, Ukraine. Downing an airline has consistently been blamed on East Ukrainians supported by Russia. Didn't happen by Russia. Russia was behind the WikiLeaks release of the John Podesta emails. Never happened. It was someone inside the Democratic National Committee that was angry at they were immorally and illegally preventing Bernie Sanders from becoming the presidential nominee, swinging it over to Hillary Clinton. He smuggled out a hard drive with all the evidence that ended up in the hands of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange. He published it, and yet for the last 3 years, all we've heard is Russia and the corruption that occurs under Trump. You can criticize Trump, as I have, but Trump had nothing to do with the WikiLeaks. And those WikiLeaks were about Podesta and Hillary Clinton, and also why the real reasons that she had Gaddafi murdered and the destruction of the number one country in prosperity and gross domestic product and age in the year that happened. Also, under Barack Obama and his Justice Department, they provided weapons and explosives to Mexican Sinaloa drug cartel. Fact. What happened to the Navy SEALs who supposedly assassinated Osama bin Laden? Now, these are just some of the many inconsistencies that we see. For example, weapons of mass destruction. Everyone involved knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. Colin Powell should have known. And his chief of staff has appeared on this, Lawrence Wilkerson has appeared on this program several times, talking about how disappointed it was that they were fed misinformation. Where did they get that information? Dick Cheney. And who in Dick Cheney? Scooter Libby, who was later found guilty but then pardoned by Bush for his crimes. They set up a separate, covert intelligence manipulation and creation agency in Dick Cheney's office at the White House. So, and then they fed that information to Judith Miller, the New York Times. Miller then promoted the idea that this agent, this former Iraqi agent named Curveball, who had already been discredited, was a legitimate person. That person wasn't. So then the White House would come, see, even the New York Times says that this is right. It's a circular way of supporting one another. So what is the outcome? The outcome is that as of today, we have been lied to, set up, used and abused by almost every administration and by government agencies who have no accountability, and not a single person has been held accountable in any agency of government, including those who can be proven they engage in crimes against humanity and murder. Not one has been found, not even arrested. So what kind of system is it when we have we the people held to one account and they virtually given a free pass no matter what they do? So that's my concern about 9/11. Not that we're not going to hear from Richard Gage in a moment, new information that is compelling. But if we had brand new information that proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that the official story was wrong, the media would not touch it, because the media is beholden to those people who are influencing it. We played a clip showing you the former head of the CIA acknowledging, and the former head of CBS News acknowledging, that they had plants from the CIA that gave them stories. And if you thought that was a lot back then, it's in the thousands today. So where exactly are you going to find the truth? Something Henry David Thoreau requested. Before love, before wealth, the truth. We have no truth today, not in the mainstream media. And when we do have the truth, there's no forum. It's being censored by Google and Facebook and condemned by Wikipedia. So where do you go for the truth? We're going to take a brief break, come back, and just in about 3 minutes, we're going to be talking or hearing from Richard Gage. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you to a special presentation on the subject of 9/11. I'm not here to tell you what happened. I'm here to tell you what misinformation we've been given from those who did not want to find the truth. We're going to go to Richard Gage in just a moment. I want to let our stations know that the program's going to run long today because we have a lot to share with you. I know some of the sister stations, like BAI, will end at 55 after the hour. However, on Progressive Radio Network, we will continue. So for those of you who want to hear the complete special today, you can go to prn.fm. That's prn.fm. You can watch and hear the program, because we have some interesting video footage you have not seen, this compelling evidence coming your way. Just two quick program announcements. I'm going to be up in Harlem this Saturday, leading demonstrations and giving new information on why you should question everything about the safety and efficacy of vaccines. That's at noon, and I'll give you more information on tomorrow's show where we have time on that. Also, one of the 10 people who are in our study coming up for 2 months, starting the 1st of October and going through November, at a facility, then another month at home following specific protocols on anti-aging to see if I'm able to actually reverse the DNA, to lengthen the telomeres, to increase the mitochondria in the brain, the heart, with a lot of tests. Those tests are being paid for. Person doesn't have to pay for it, though there are out-of-pocket expenses. But I'm donating my time and a lot more than time to see this gets done. We believe it could be historic if I'm able to have hard, qualifiable documentation of the biomarkers changing. But one person now says that they are not able to come. Okay, then we have one opening. And we had about 700 people apply. When we selected the 10, and you can't have some life-ending disease to get in this study. You could have arthritis. You could be overweight. You could have depression. But you can have, like, advanced cancers and advanced heart disease, because that would skew the study. You have to be 65 and older. If you'd like to find out more, call Lou Ann Panessi at 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. Now, we're going to go to Richard Gage, and then following Richard Gage, we're going to play you a video clip that I'd never seen. I don't know if you have, but compelling evidence from people who are first responders as to what was going on the ground and in the buildings prior to these buildings collapsing. I think you'll find it interesting.
Gage, AIA architect, member of the American Institute of Architects, and founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. We're a group of 3,000 architects and engineers calling for a new investigation into the destruction of all three World Trade Center skyscrapers on 9/11. Why are 3,000 architects demanding a new investigation, and millions of others, by the way? Well, when I saw Building 7, the third skyscraper to collapse on 9/11, and I saw how it went down uniformly, suddenly, symmetrically, straight down into its own footprint in under 7 seconds, after witnesses heard explosions on the afternoon of 9/11, I was shocked. Now, this building was not hit by a plane. So how did it collapse? We have two planes bringing down three buildings. How does that happen? Well, this is what caught my attention. Nobody died, according to the official story, in Building 7. So let's look at this. It doesn't seem to have the set of baggage that the Twin Towers is laced with, this emotional, the incredible pain we all suffered on 9/11 and ever since. So Building 7 is one of the tallest skyscrapers in most of our cities. It's only half the height of the Twin Towers. So here's a building that after 7 years, NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, who was tasked with explaining the collapse of all three skyscrapers to the American people, but 7 years later they come out with an official report after everybody's forgotten about it. Not that they ever knew, because the American Institute of Architects, of which I'm a member, one of 80,000 members, did not even see fit to issue one bulletin on the third worst structural failure in modern history. This is an extraordinary set of circumstances. This should be the most studied building failure ever. Remember, it wasn't hit by a plane. There's no jet fuel in this building. So when you see it come down, you see that it looks exactly like the old hotels in Las Vegas, and yet they told us it came down by normal office fires. Office fires have not brought down a skyscraper ever before 9/11. And these are very few scattered and small fires in this building. Look at any of the photos or videos. So we get real curious. It's just not adding up. NIST says, well, we found no evidence of explosives. Did you look? No, they admit in writing. We didn't look for evidence of explosives a year later after making that claim. But there is evidence of explosives. You can tell just by watching the building come down that it's falling at free fall, acceleration. The only way something can fall at free fall acceleration is if there's no resistance underneath it. This building had 40,000 tons of structural steel, three times stronger than it ever needed to be to hold this building up. It's a safety factor that structural engineers employ. And yet, it drops as fast as a bowling ball falling out of the sky. For a third of its 7-second fall, NIST was finally forced to admit this publicly in their final report because they were publicly embarrassed by key members of AE 9/11 Truth, architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, into admitting it because this is easily measurable and observable. Before, they had said, well, if it were to fall at free fall, that would mean there'd be no structure underneath. This is Shyam Sunder, the lead engineer of NIST, for these reports. So it's absolutely mind-boggling. So they include this admission in their final report, and they do not provide the implication of that. What is the implication of all 82 columns on each floor, for at least 8 floors, because that's 100 feet, that's how far this building fell at free fall? Well, the implications are, according to Leroy Halsey, professor at University of Alaska, one of the top forensic structural engineers in the country, chairman of the civil engineering department there, he's been engaged in a 4-year, $300,000 study, which has now been released. What are his conclusions? That the building suffered global collapse, not progressive collapse, as NIST claimed, that all 600 columns had to have been removed at once, virtually at once, within a fraction of a second of each other, or a second of each other. And in order for this building to collapse the way it did in the videos. So his finite element analysis computer model shows exactly, it mimics the collapse of Building 7 that we see in the videos. NIST's computer model doesn't do that at all. It starts to tip over, even when they try to manipulate their columns into a massive release of all of these columns. It begins to tip over, and so they stop the entire modeling just 2 seconds afterward. So they can't reproduce the set of circumstances that make the visible collapse, but they claim nevertheless that they've proven their point, which is the initiation of collapse of this building due to office fires, which were raging on the 12th floor. And so these beams were expanding, they claim, pushing this girder off of its seat on this column 79. None of this can be true. All of it has been proven false by the University of Alaska's study on the collapse of Building 7. It's called a reevaluation of the collapse. So this is now going through the circuit of architects and engineers and in the media, and we are going to be presenting the results of this study and the forensic evidence, which shows incendiaries, which are similar to explosives, but they work by means of heat, because there are pools of molten iron found by the first responders. A structural engineer, Leslie Robertson himself, of the World Trade Center. The iron workers, they're finding all of these pools of molten iron. They've said it's flowing like lava. You've never seen this. They've never seen it before in fires. Remember, this is normal office fires. And even jet fuel, by the way, is only a hydrocarbon. It doesn't burn any hotter than desks or chairs, 600 degrees Fahrenheit, according to its manufacturer. So we don't have, in the official story, any possible explanation for the massive temperatures exceeding 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit, which is what's required for the melting of steel and iron, which is pouring out of the South Tower minutes prior to its collapse. Yes, we turn our attention to the Twin Towers after we see the obvious controlled demolition of Building 7, now proven in this university study out of Fairbanks, Alaska. when we see the Twin Towers collapse, what we see is the upper portion collapsing in on itself. And then the ejection laterally of freely flying structural steel sections weighing 4 to 8 tons laterally, landing 600 feet in every direction. At 80 miles an hour, these are ejected. This is studied by physicists. What else are physicists showing? The sudden symmetrical descent of the top of each of these towers at near free fall acceleration, almost as fast as the freely falling debris. So this is accelerating straight down through 90,000 tons of structural steel in each of these buildings below the point of jet plane impact. Now NIST says, well, the top part of this building after the weakening of steel due to the jet fuel fires drove the rest of the building down to the ground and then crushed itself. That comes out of a study by Zdenek Bazant in Chicago Northwestern University, 3 days, submitted 2 days after 9/11. And it remains the key theoretical basis for NIST's column failure theory in the Twin Towers. But that's not what we see at all. The top part has crushed itself, the videos show. After hundreds of witnesses hear explosions, 156 of them recorded orally, released by the New York Times, because the New York Court State of Appeals forced the release from the city who was hiding this until August of 2005. What do they say? Like a belt, all these explosions going all the way around the towers. Like a train running under my feet. All these explosions before the towers collapsed. Why are there explosions heard, seen, documented before the towers collapsed by all of these first responders? Are they credible witnesses? Yeah, we think so. So what else is going on in the Twin Towers? As this so-called gravitational collapse is happening, there's explosions 20, 40, 60 stories down below the point of jet plane impacts with building solids expelled out of them. It's in all the videos. This captures the attention of architects and engineers and many others, hopefully. So why do we have in all the World Trade Center dust found by the U.S. Geological Survey, R.J. Lee, billions of previously molten iron microspheres, almost naked to the human eye, the diameter of a human hair on average. Molten iron, again, 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit, 4 times hotter than jet fuel burns. Iron, elemental iron, not melted steel. Where does 100,000 tons of elemental iron come from? We haven't used iron in our skyscrapers for 100 years or so. R.J. Lee, an environmental engineer, says it's formed during the event. Well, thermite, the incendiary, issues molten iron at 4,000 degrees. Under explosive conditions, this liquid aerosolizes and cools and falls with all the dust. It's the only possible explanation for the findings of these previously molten iron microspheres. Well, what could have caused them? Well, a team of 8 scientists led by Niels Harrit in Copenhagen, in all the studies that they do, they find red-gray chips. They thought they were paint, but they are attracted to a magnet. They do X-ray energy dispersive spectroscopy. They find iron and aluminum, the ingredients of thermite, in this unignited form of nanothermite. Why nano? Because they zoom in with an electron microscope 50,000 times, and they find nanoparticles of iron oxide and aluminum platelets, particles that are 1,000 times smaller than the diameter of a human hair. Nanotechnology. These iron and aluminum particles are set in a bed of oxygen, silica, carbon, organic material, which is used for the concussive force for TNT. So this is an incendiary that's been more engineered to become more explosive. You see, when the particles of nanotechnology are so small, the surface area is voluminous. It's exponentially larger. So the chemical reaction is instantaneous, becomes more explosive. These are found in all the World Trade Center dust samples. What are they doing there? When they heat these up, what do they produce in the lab? Molten iron microspheres, which the USGS and R.J. Lee couldn't figure out where they came from. But they documented them very well. A signature component of the World Trade Center dust. It's not even World Trade Center dust unless it has these molten iron microspheres, which we can't figure out where they came from. Well, they came from these chips. Why do we see on CNN footage that was never aired publicly, but which we have the footage, of these mysterious construction workers walking away from Building 7, hearing an explosion over their shoulder, looking back at the building, and then looking straight into the camera, CNN camera, and saying this, "Did you hear that? That building's about to blow up. Flame and debris coming down. The building's coming down." This is the late afternoon of 9/11, before Building 7 comes down. Why do we have the announcement by the BBC from Jane Stanley announcing the collapse of World Trade Center 7 20 minutes before it ever happened?
Jane Stanley. Jane, what more can you tell us about the Salomon Brothers building and its collapse?
Well, only really what you already know. Details are very, very sketchy. As you can see behind me, the Trade Center appears to be still burning. We see these huge clouds of smoke and ash, and we know that behind that there's an empty piece of what was a very familiar New York skyline, a symbol of the financial.
And they're even announcing the reason for the collapse of the building due to structural weakening when the Twin Towers came down. They apologize for this grievous error, citing the confusing events of the day. What, does this make them psychic? What's going on here? Why did CNN announce the collapse of a 50-story building at 11:07 that morning when it hadn't even collapsed? Well, had it collapsed at 11, they said 15 minutes earlier, 10:45 or so. Had it collapsed at that time, we wouldn't even have any video footage of Building 7 because it would have been completely obscured by the massive dust cloud released when the Twin Towers had collapsed. So some people speculate that it was supposed to come down at that time. I don't know, but it's fascinating to look at all of the evidence that just adds up to something being wrong with this entire picture. Why did Larry Silverstein, the owner of the World Trade Center complex, he had secured it 6 weeks prior to 9/11 and had owned and built Building 7 prior to that in 86 or so. Why is he on air a year later on PBS trying to explain Building 7?
I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
What does that mean? The firefighters were not in the building fighting the fire. They were told not to fight it. They were told it had structural damage, so don't go in and fight the fire. Even NIST acknowledges later that the structural damage was an insignificant factor in the building's collapse. The forensic evidence is clear. Why isn't the media talking about this? It's in a 25-page peer-reviewed paper in the Bentham Open Chemical Physics Journal. It's attracting the attention of millions of people, and the alternative media, the conspiracy theorists, as they're called by mainstream media. What have they got to hide here? What are the implications of these three explosive controlled demolitions? It's beyond my pay grade as an architect, I can tell you that. But I will bring you the evidence which you cannot deny, cannot refute. In a court of law, all this evidence is solid and we've only scratched the surface in this small segment. So I'm going to leave it in your hands. What is the mainstream media trying to hide here? And our government? And our elected representatives?
Well, that's the question. How do we know that the mainstream media has not been self-censoring? Or had people within the mainstream media coming directly from the intelligence agencies that would have been able to have directed the story? Because when you get a story being directed, and we've all seen it, the very same talking points on every single one of the media, using the same words, the same phrases, clearly someone created the story and then everyone parroted it. Real journalists would never do that. Real journalists would look for the truth wherever it is, no matter who's behind it. That didn't happen. What I'm going to show you now are two back-to-back clips. One is one that you probably have not seen about first responders. These people were not allowed to testify under oath. Why? The mainstream media chose not to interview these people. Why? Why? And then the next one is to show you just how embedded the CIA is into our mainstream media. Please watch.
The fire department was sitting here all morning.
Yeah,
they were sitting right there. And I was wondering what they doing. And I said, where's the fire department just sitting there? That's what I'm thinking.
No, it wasn't in the commercial airline. No, that second one wasn't open. No, the second one, definitely. First one I never saw. The second one I saw was big, but it didn't have any markings on it that I saw.
No, I didn't see any. The second one, I didn't have to like no camouflage or anything.
No, no emblems, no logos.
I mean, it was moving so unbelievably fast. The last thing I saw before the second attack was the silver underside of the plane before it went into the building.
Plane wasn't no airline or anything. It was a twin-engine, big, gray plane.
Mark, were you close enough to be able to see any markings on the airplane?
It definitely did not look like a commercial plane. I didn't see any windows on the side.
No, it was a black plane. It looked like a fighter jet.
It looked like a fighter jet.
And it didn't look like a commercial jet.
Could be a drone aircraft. That's an aircraft that's guided electronically to its target without having a pilot.
Did you actually see the jet itself?
Yeah.
And what type was it?
It was gray, to be honest with you. It was gray. It was like a 737.
I thought it was a fighter jet coming in to cover the city.
We've heard reports of secondary explosions after the aircraft impacted, whether in fact there wasn't something else at the base of the towers.
In the lobby, it looked as though a bomb had exploded there. All the glass was taken out. There were 10-foot by 10-foot marble panels that were once walls. Several people with their hair singed, skin hanging off.
And at that time, we heard a huge explosion. I never in a million years feared those buildings coming down. Never. I did fear secondary explosion or possibly a second plane. 30th floor. We hear another explosion.
I really thought it was maybe the end of the world. There was going to be more planes coming in. There was going to be bombs going off. I don't know, to what degree they really just had us surrounded.
From World Trade Center, we took a hit on that last explosion. The man posted to be evacuated this time.
He's dead?
It exploded and it all just blew us all in.
The fire department happened?
All back. There's no pulse, nothing.
The third explosion, the whole lobby collapsed on us.
What was it like?
Horrible.
It's like hell. You don't want to know.
The whole building just collapsed on us inside the lobby.
Was that a secondary explosion?
Yes, it was.
That was the planet probably?
Yeah, definitely a secondary explosion. We was inside waiting to go upstairs, and on the way upstairs, the whole fucking plane blew. And we just collapsed on everybody inside the lobby.
Similar to the first tower coming down, secondary?
I don't know about the first one, but I know the second one, it was terrible. Then it was a third one, too, after that one. You're in the building trying to help people, and it's exploding on your side of the building. So I don't think it could get any worse than this.
Big boom, come down the steps, everything fine till we got to the basement and then everything just fell in. I got trapped in there when another guy crawled out, kept getting hit in the head, kept bags rolled around, finally clawed our way out over the rubble.
Yeah.
Come on, Don.
We did all right. All right, way to be, Tom.
The way the structure is collapsing, this was the result of something that was planned. This is not, it's not accidental that the first tower just happened to collapse and then the second tower just happened to collapse in exactly the same way. How they accomplished this, we don't know.
They're thinking about bringing the building down. They didn't say what building, they just said bringing a building down. Last few seconds, he took his hand off and you heard 3, 2, 1, and he was just saying, just run for your life, just run for your life. And then it was like another 2, 3 seconds, you heard explosions, like boom.
Oh, you want to call your mother or something? Don't worry about me.
This was a boom, and like you felt a rumble in the ground, like almost like you wanted to grab onto something.
He said after the recent attacks which the U.S. has witnessed, the U.S. government ventured to point fingers at me, accuse me of involvement. The U.S. government has consistently blamed me for being behind every occasion its enemies attack it. I would like to assure the world that I did not plan the recent attacks, which seems to have been planned by people for personal reasons.
The president said that Osama bin Laden was the prime suspect. Why?
There's just a lot of evidence.
Oh, the reason I keep insisting that there was a relationship between Iraq and Saddam and Al-Qaeda, because there was a relationship.
Two-thirds of Americans say it's not worth fighting.
So?
So?
Okay, you saw, if you're watching this, you saw explosions, you heard explosions from first responders who were there. You also saw where the owner of the building said, I was told that they were going to bring it down. You can't run into a building and plant explosives to coordinate the building going down like a pancake in its own footprint unless you had weeks to months to do it, not a matter of a couple hours. That's not physically possible. These are the questions that have not been raised under a grand jury, where everyone is brought in who is a witness. Those people were never interviewed during the official hearings on 9/11. But what's behind it? One thing is for sure, a disinformation campaign by the media. But how could possibly the media be complicit on any level of hiding information that impacted all Americans? Well, the CIA is a master of lying. That's all they do. That's why I gave you just a partial list. I have a list twice that long that I gave at the beginning of the program that have been documented. Those are not conspiracy theories, they're facts. Here's just one example. This is Senator Church bringing the CIA director and other intelligence people before Congress under oath and asking them how much control they have over the media. I think you'll find it interesting. All right, we'll come back to that in a moment. The video is not loading. It'll load in a few minutes. And next, we're going to go to our next panelist to hear what he has to say.
That was when I became a soldier.
in the United States military and the Army. When I became a police officer for 23 years in New Jersey, and when I became an attorney. And the Constitution is what's at stake today. And in part, it's because of the way the media has covered the news. Thomas Jefferson spoke about the need to preserve democracy, the population needed to be educated and vigilant, and unfortunately, they appear to be neither. And this is dramatically shown in the way that 9/11 research has been received thus far. What happened on September 11, 2001, was an egregious offense to our country and to the world, in the sense of freedoms being in the balance. So it's very important for everyone to relook at the situation. A lot of research has been done, and there's a lot of evidence now to support an alternative view, an alternative theory that should be considered. And that theory, in reference to the collapse of the towers in New York City, is that pre-planted explosives and incendiaries were placed in that building, in all three buildings, to facilitate the collapse, the destruction. Now, why would I say that the population, unfortunately, has not been educated and vigilant? Because certainly they read the media, and certainly they would think they are. But curiously enough, if you go back in the 1920s, you'll find that Morgan Interest did a study to see what it would take to control the mindset of the American people. And they determined that if they could buy the controlling interest in certain newspapers at that time, they could do just that. Up through our time, we've seen an operation called Mockingbird. And that was a CIA operation to infiltrate American media with CIA personnel, of people that were contracted, friendly to the official story.
Do you have any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to a major circulation American journal?
We do have people who submit pieces to other two American journals.
Do you have any people paid by the CIA who are working for television networks?
This, I think, gets into the kind of getting into the details, Mr. Chairman, that I'd like to get into in executive session.
We have seen through John Kennedy administration during that period of time, Operation Northwoods, which was a plan concocted by Lemnitzer, who was the general in charge of the Joint Chief of Staff, and their operation was to cause a false flag so we'd invade Cuba. And unfortunately, John Kennedy would not allow that to go through. We've seen various false flags with reference to Vietnam. When I was a student at Rutgers, I was a student body president. I led demonstrations against Vietnam War because it was a lie to the people. And it cost tens of thousands of American lives and millions of people that lived in South Vietnam. The purpose here is to show that there is a power structure, and the power structure needs to influence the minds of people. They control their minds of people, and they do that through the media. Now, what has happened is that, as a police officer, I could say that when 9/11 happened, the first thing that a police officer is taught in the academy is to protect the scene. And that means the evidence needs to be protected. It needs to be secured. It needs to be analyzed, forensically studied. There is protocol for both the fire and the police to do that. That was not done. the girders, the steel, reminiscent of maybe going back to the Kennedy assassination, having to do with John Kennedy's brain and the direction of the bullet. Well, here, simple forensic analysis could have told you that office fires could have not brought those buildings down because they couldn't do the damage on the metal. The metal was corrosed. There was sulfidation there. There was all kinds of shapes and bending that is so unnatural that it could never happen in that way. So I wanted just to give that context because now I'm the president, executive director, lawyers committee. And with what I previously said, I'm not speaking as in that capacity. I'm speaking as my own self when I speak.
Okay. His entire interview is on PRN.fm, and I suggest that you avail yourself of it. That brings us to the conclusion of today's special on 9/11. Do I know what happened? I do not. Do I know the lies in the official report? Yes, I do. And that's why I gave the presentation I did, and that's why they gave the presentations they did. The media has been complicit in so many lies to the American public. It's time that we stop believing them and look for the truth elsewhere. I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day, everyone.